You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
All right, it's still Wednesday, November 10th. This is The Christian Commute Evening Edition, and you're riding with me to Bucky's because I want some brisket and I need gas. Bucky's is going to make a lot of money off of me when I start coming back to work regularly. Plus, my wife, I called her. And it was like, hey, I have all this stuff to do. You want me to do it and then come home? Or do you want me to come home and then do it? And then she was pretty frustrated, so she wants me to come home and bring dinner. It's one of those days, it's like, I'm tired of working late, but it sounds like my house is a zoo right now. So, boy, I wish I was. No, I want to walk in there and regulate everything. That's what I'm going to do. Calm all the kids down. That's what I get to do as a dad who works. I get to be a hero who walks in with a pound of brisket. Like, what now? I just walked in with a pound of brisket. You can never get enough brisket. That would be one of my sayings. And maybe it'll make Jewish people listen to the show because they love a nice brisket. Anyway, let's get to the show. It's dark. Where's the light in this thing? Do the lights in my Kia Soul work? This is one of those old cars and you're glad that anything works. I have a full show for you this afternoon, and here's to hoping I don't drive past Bucky's like I do half the time. Today's show topic is license, ministry license. We're going to talk about what that is. And I have a question in the inbox about something called daily offices, and we'll get to those things. Man, I'm hungry. I'm going to eat at Bucky's and then bring separate food home for my kids. And then after those things, and after my lunch, dinner, it's 6:30. After my dinner, well, probably before the dinner, we're going to talk about Matthew chapter 7. We're going to be in verses 13 through 14. That's going to start the show off with the Bible chapter review. So I would go right in it, but once again, I've mistimed the banter and the anecdotes at the beginning of the show, and I'm not done with them while I get onto the freeway. So I'm out of practice, guys. You guys got to bear with me. You get this internal timing, muscle memory from experience, if you will. And I haven't been driving to work, so my internal clock of how long it takes me to get from my office to the left lane of the freeway so I can start the Bible chapter review is off. So I'm being too short on my anecdotes and little jokes, all right? I should have talked more about the brisket. That's my impression of a Jewish person who likes brisket. All right, now let's talk about Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 through 14. From another Jewish person, the most important Jewish person ever, Jesus. And Jesus says this, "Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide, and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it. For the gate is small, and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it." Now, right after this, he's going to tell people to beware of false prophets. And before this, all the way back up to the Beatitudes, he's telling people how to live their life and how to treat others. And a lot of what he's saying in the Beatitudes and onwards is antithetical to the way the world lives. So if you look around, most people are not going to be living like Jesus told you to live or told them to live. And you can apply the same thing for yourself today when you look at the world. Maybe not so when you look at all your friends from church, because that's all your friends from church and you're all living holy, godly lives. And then you think of false prophets leading people astray. When you look at the false prophets and false teachers of today, look at Kenneth Copeland, that man's a false prophet. Look at Mike Bickle, that man's a false prophet. Look at, what's his name? Bill Johnson and all the prophecy going on there. There's lots of people following them, and they're all over the radio. Don't follow after those people. But the way Jesus talks about living, the Christian life, what was called, quote-unquote, the way, very early on in the church, that's the narrow gate. When you look at where everybody else is, and it's not about size, it's not about being contrarian, it's just about numbers. Most people are going to reject Jesus, and they're going to live a worldly, sinful life, because the things of God are holy things before dogs, or pearls before swine to them. So don't follow after everybody else. Beware of that path. It looks okay, because that's where everyone is going. But the narrow gate, the kingdom gate, living a godly life is a narrow path. There's few who find that path and stay on that way and go through that gate. And we would be remiss if we just didn't do math off of this. Jesus isn't here trying to say that, 70% of people are lost and 30% of people get saved. But as somebody who lives in the Bible Belt, and I drive by a lot of full churches, but then I look at the world around me, it really makes me think of, hey man, the gate is really narrow. And even some of these people in church, they might not have found it either. We got to live like Jesus says we're going to live. And that's not a works-based salvation. It's more about rejecting the worldly path, which we, if we're going to live by the tenets of the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount, we're going to do that. And with that, I'll end the Bible chapter review. So now comes into the tricky hour. Am I going to miss the Bucky's exit? So I'm coming up on 312. I think Bucky's is on 310. So hope I don't get too into this question. A lot of mistakes can happen here. I can get into the question and forget to go to Bucky's. Or I can get into the question, go to Bucky's, and then forget where I left off. Or, as I did last time I went to Bucky's, I could turn off my recording or pause it, get back into the car, eat my sandwich, drink my Coke, in that case it was a cherry icy, and never turn the recording back on, and then just start spitting Baptist fire into the mic with no recording on. So hopefully I can do it right. But let's go to the inbox, SethDunn88@gmail.com. SethDunn88@gmail.com. The Christian Commute is your theological roadside assistance, so much so that we have a roadside assistance line. That's 470-315-0875. I won't come fix your flat tire, but I'll answer your question about theology and apologetics. Of course, here's a reminder, never want to take the place of your biblical pastor. Don't forget to ask him, ask your Sunday school teacher, but ask me too, because I need questions for my radio show or my podcast. I'm not on the radio. All right, here comes 310. I'm getting over now. Today's question is Terry from California, which means I have still not answered all those questions sitting there from Frank. You guys know, as I always say, I like to take them in order, but today I took whatever was easiest and at the top. I got to get back in the swing of things because Frank's got some more substantial questions in there. Haven't forgotten about you, Frank, or anybody else who may be waiting down below in the older list of questions. Terry asked this: Is there a problem with the concept of daily offices? And I think this is something her pastor is pushing. I don't think I ever have studied this before. But what Terry says it is, she believes it comes from monastic life. And basically a daily office, you can almost think of it like office hours, is having an appointed time to focus on God or pray or focus on God. So on the one point, this is a really simple answer. Is there anything wrong with having an appointed time to pray or read the Bible or focus on God? Absolutely not. Guys, I do this every day. What do you think I do before I leave work? I stop. I open my Bible. I don't literally open the Bible. I get on the computer Bible. I read the Word. I think about it for a couple minutes and think, all right, how am I going to tell this to people? Before I go to bed, I pray. Every night before I go to sleep, I pray. That's an appointed time. I have scheduled times for prayer meetings throughout the week. Now, those are with other people. It's not just my own personal individual time. But yeah, if you want to do something, if something is important to you, you'll schedule a time and you'll make regular time for it. Now, why is that called daily offices? Well, maybe some monastic person came up with it. Here's where a problem comes in. When some pastor or some church staff needs a gimmick or some program to tell telling somebody something to do, like, hey, guys, we need to have daily offices. Well, where did you hear daily offices? Well, I heard about it from monastic tradition. Why are you getting recommendations from Catholic, Roman Catholic monks? That's the we should be doing whatever they're doing generally should be the opposite. Because they're lost people. Roman Catholic monks are as lost as any Roman Catholic, but they're lost in a whole special way because they've dedicated their life to serving the church and following after the wolves in sheep's clothing that are the Roman Catholic priests and the Pope, who's the biggest wolf of all. Why are we going to listen to these guys? Because they have a good idea to take time to, quote-unquote, spend time with God. Here's another thing. We want to get away from mysticism. So there's some people who think that if you spend time with God, focusing on God, maybe saying a contemplative prayer, that God's going to speak back to you somehow. So we have to beware of mysticism, and we have to beware, Terry, of copying lost people and copying false churches. But in doing so, we don't want to condemn being intentional about spending time in God's Word or praying or just thinking about God. Because we're intentional about other things, aren't we? We're intentional about when we show up to work and, you know, what time we eat dinner. So it's good to be that way about God, too. But listen, we don't want to be legalistic about it because we're not a works-based people. It's like, I check, you know, you always say, I check the box for my quiet time. We don't want to be check-the-box people. But I'll tell you this. If you schedule time, I don't care what you want to call it, if you make time, put it on your Outlook calendar or on your Apple iPod calendar or whatever to say, you know, I'm going to stop and pray for 10 minutes, it ain't going to hurt you. I'm going to stop and read the Bible for 10 minutes, it ain't going to hurt you. You'll probably be better off for it. So conceptually, it's great to do that. Just don't be legalistic of it. Let's not try to copy monasticism, and let's watch out for the mysticism. Now I'm going to go into Bucky's, and I can't tell you if I'm going to come back or not. Hopefully, I remember to hit the record button. All right, I remembered to turn my recorder on. So here I am, having finished my brisket sandwich from Bucky's. I still have my cherry icy. It's white cherry. I like red cherry. I know the flavor is the same, but it should be red. And now I'm going to try to find my way back to I-75. And thank you, Terry, for writing in. I'm going to get to today or tonight's show topic. Oh, here's this guy just walking as slow as he can in a slant. Come on, dude. He's just walking across the parking. Don't back out on me, Toyota Tundra. I'm sorry, there's quite a bit of Bucky's traffic. And there's one of these guys. One of these guys on planet Earth. I hope you know what I mean by saying one of these guys. He's walking in a diagonal pattern across the parking lot. So he's not in any hurry to get across just out of the way where people is driving. He's just walking as slow as he could. I can't stand it. I can't stand to inconvenience other people like that. I don't, maybe it's just me. Anyway. License. Ministry license specifically. That's today's show topic. And maybe I'll educate some of you as to what it is, because until I went to seminary, and listen to this, until I was probably 4 or 5 years into seminary, I didn't know what it was. A license to ministry. So some of you may have heard of this, some of you may have not. But in my culture, because by the way, will you find a license to the gospel ministry in the Bible? You won't. It's not there. And arguably, you really won't find formal ordination there, like an ordination council and saying, okay, we hereby ordain you to be a pastor. Now, we know pastors would be appointed. We know people had hands laid upon them. But a lot of the formality in all denominations today, not just mine, is not found in the Bible. I think I talked a couple days ago about the process you have to go through to be a United Methodist elder in that you call it denomination, but it's really one big church, the United Methodist Church. I mean, it's lengthy, and there's a lot of requirements. Probably won't find all of those in the Bible. I mean, I'm sure they're just trying to make sure the people are qualified, biblically qualified. Ha ha! The United Methodists are trying to make sure somebody's biblically qualified. Maybe 100 years ago they were. And then you get into Baptist world. Ordination's a local church thing. And one, like the denomination can't cancel somebody's ordination. That's why you have these controversies of this guy's a sex abuser. What are you going to do about it? Well, nothing. We didn't ordain him. We're the denomination. It's up to the individual church to do something about it. And if they're crooked, they're not going to. So when you think of ordination, think of appointing someone to the pastoral office. Or you might even ordain somebody to the office of deacon. But what about licensure? Again, there's no hint of this in the Bible. Licensure is, at least in the Baptist culture in the South, licensure is a church saying, we recognize that this particular individual has been called to the ministry, usually preaching, and maybe eventually called to the pastorate. So when someone goes and tells his church that he's been called to the ministry, and again, that in itself is nebulous, because aren't all church members supposed to be involved in some kind of ministry? But usually somebody's saying, I've been called to preach, and I'm going to go to seminary to learn to preach. Another thing that's not in the Bible is seminary. But that's the church recognizing and really endorsing this person. Because anybody can go out and say, I've been called to preach. You want to schedule me to preach your revival? Or I'm holding the Bible study at the coffee house. Come on. But what you should really say is, well, who's endorsed you? What church says you should be able to preach? And what local church says you should be holding a Bible study at the coffee house? How do I know you're not some heretic or some misfit? And that's where licensure comes in. And typically the process is this. Somebody tells his church he's called to the ministry. The church considers it. Maybe he enrolls in seminary and they license him. Either when he graduates or maybe halfway through. Because a lot of time people are in seminary and they're already employed as ministers, if not already in the office of pastor. Which I always thought that was kind of funny when I went to seminary and I got there and I was in class and like me and two other guys were the only people who weren't working as pastors. I'm like, hold on a minute. You guys haven't been trained for the ministry yet. Why are you in seminary? You're already pastors. I didn't get it. But you don't have to, you know, you don't have to have a seminary degree to be a pastor. You just have to be qualified. Maybe they went to Bible college. I don't know. So what about the trajectory of my life? Here's another personal show for you. When I graduated seminary, I was about this close. I'm holding up my finger, my pointer finger and my thumb real close together. I was about this close to getting kicked out of church. That would be the demonic church of Freemasonry, Roland Springs. So to fill some of y'all in who've never heard this story before, when I decided to enroll in seminary, I was a member of Tabernacle Baptist Church. And I remember sitting there, listening to the sermons, thinking about what I would say. And I don't mean this in an egotistical way, because Brother Don Hadaway was a good preacher. Still is. And I was like, I think I could preach. I think I should preach. I think I would be a good preacher. And then I heard that the seminary that Brother Don went to and that the middle school pastor went to had an extension center 20 to 30 minutes from my house. I said, you know what? I'm going to go to seminary. I'm going to enroll. Much to the chagrin of everybody around me, because I just got through with one master's. Now I'm going to go get another one. So what I had to have was an endorsement from two friends One of my endorsements was from my best friend. He's not, he wasn't even a Christian. It could, so it could literally come from anybody. But you have to at least have two friends who will vouch for you, who the seminary doesn't know from Adam. You could get Adolf Hitler to vouch for you. But you have to be vouched by two friends. Then you have to be vouched by a church leader, and your church has to endorse you. So you have to give a paper to your church, and they have to say, yeah, I endorse this guy. So I told Brother Richard that I wanted to go to seminary, and that I felt called to do it, and gave him the paper. He didn't even interview me. He just filled it out. I don't remember sitting with Brother Richard for even 5 or 10 minutes. I was like, here's my paper the seminary wants. The church has to have a business meeting to endorse you. I mean, typically, again, this is not biblical stuff. This is a seminary rule. So the seminary wants your church to endorse you. So typically, the church would have a business meeting. I wasn't at this business meeting. No member asked me anything. They just endorsed me. So, I mean, I'm glad they did, but I'm just telling you that's the process at a fairly influential and large church where I live in Cartersville Tabernacle Baptist. And usually, eventually, when somebody's gone through this process, you'll see them, I don't know, given a Wednesday night teaching class. I don't know. They're put over the youth to do something, et cetera, et cetera. I know I had coached softball. I mean, that's the one thing I'd done. But eventually I left Tabernacle because this is just some things I've talked about on the show before, and I went to First Baptist Church at Woodstock, and I never got re-endorsed. And apparently you're supposed to if you change churches, but I didn't know that. And I left First Baptist Woodstock after the Ergen Canner invitation to the pulpit. That when Johnny Hunt backed Ergen Canner and the church was happy to have him preach there, I didn't want anything to do with him. And it wasn't just that. It was like there was no process to go through a meeting and get time with anybody who could make a decision. Like there was, if Johnny Hunt said it, forget it. You're not getting a meeting with him. So I came to that. I was like, this mega church is just about the business. It's not about, an individual church member can't do anything. You might say you can't get justice. I was like, I don't want to be here anymore. So I left. And that's when I started attending Expedition Church in Cartersville, which I've talked about before. Now, I ticked off a lot of Baptist muckety-mucks when I stood against Ergen Canner in the Georgia Baptist Convention, some of whom found out I was in seminary, and some of whom wanted to get me kicked out of seminary. Not only kicked out of seminary, but they wanted me to lose my job as an adjunct instructor at Tennessee Temple University, which was an independent Baptist college in Chattanooga. And through a connection in seminary, I had gotten a job teaching there online. So when these guys went after me, thank the Lord, my dean at my local campus, he protected me, but he told me what I needed to do. I had to go get a new endorsement. Well, now I had to get an endorsement at Expedition. Expedition didn't even have formal membership. I just told the pastor what happened and said, here, sign this paper, and he did it. No business meeting or anything. Now, granted, that guy had put more work and supervision into me than anybody at Tabernacle or Woodstock ever did. Because I taught the youth there on Wednesday nights for a long time. And I would meet with that guy at Chick-fil-A like a good Baptist and talk to him. So he was actually really doing a job of overseeing me, even in some formal projects. But no business meeting. And I'm telling you guys all this, not to say, here's my personal story, here's my life story again. But again, it's the wild, wild west. For you guys who think, like, not just anybody can be a pastor or go to seminary. No, it doesn't take much. Almost anybody will endorse you or send you to do it. And it could be a big church with 1,000 members in a formal business meeting, or a little church that one guy planted and runs with his father-in-law and one of his friends. And it could just be anything. One church has a business meeting, one doesn't. Anything, anything, anything. I eventually left Expedition Church, and I don't want to belabor that point. after they had a Roman Catholic in the pulpit. I mean, there's little issues with every church, especially small church plants. But when they put the Roman Catholic in the pulpit on Sunday, that was it for me. Like, I'm done. And it was, again, like nobody understood why that was a problem. And that's when I ended up at Roland Springs Baptist Church. And I was super happy there. But as we know now, Roland Springs Baptist Church is the demonic church of Freemasonry. They knew I was in seminary. They were happy to have me teach Sunday school class, especially given that I was in seminary. I was respected theologically there as a good teacher. Nobody really likes bloggers, I have to say. So that's always a negative in the eyes of some church people. But it got to the point where I was about to get kicked out of church because I would not let the issue of Freemasonry go. As in, this is a sin that's going in our church unchecked, and these men need to be called to repentance, not coddled, and not say, oh, it's okay. This is not a hill to die on. And I've told that story 1,000 times I've written the book. The thing about that is, that was all coming to a head when I had one single class left, Hebrew 2. And I was like, I cannot get kicked out of church right before I finish Hebrew 2. Because if I get formally kicked out of church, I can kiss New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary goodbye. But on the other hand, I have to go with my conscience. I have to stand before God and explain what I did at church. And I'm a covenant member of this church, and I have to stand against sin. And I have to stand for righteousness. I have to, no matter what. So providentially, I didn't get kicked out till I finished Hebrew 2. So at a lot of, I tell all this story to say, that's when a lot of people are going to get licensed. And churches have various requirements. You may have to be enrolled in seminary. You may have to demonstrate a call. A lot of churches, they'll check your tithe and say, we're not going to license you unless you're tithing 10%. I think that's the rule at First Baptist Woodstock, because I had a friend, Ryan, who wanted to get licensed there. And he moved from Ohio just for the sole purpose of going to Johnny Hunt's church and getting licensed there. But like me, he saw the other side of Johnny Hunt. Listen, you have all these mega pastors out there, and this is a big of an aside, but I can find you people in my life and people they know and people I know who've seen the other side of the Johnny Hunts and the James Merritts of the world, and they're not all they're cracked up to be. Anyway, all that to say, that happened when? June of 2017. I graduated in December of 2017, got kicked out of my church in 2017. So here's a guy with a Master's of Divinity who's basically going nowhere. And ever since, I've found myself attending Cartersville First Baptist Church. And I've never attempted to join there. I don't want to join there. They know how I feel. I know how they feel. I'm glad they allow me and my family to go there, because other churches in town would not after the Roland Springs thing. But that's for various reasons, and I don't want to criticize them on the show. I'll give one. I know of a Sunday school teacher there who denies the general resurrection. Why would I want to be a member of a church where the Sunday school, that's allowed? Because you have a big church like that. And the thing about it is, it's a bunch of super nice people. They believe the Baptist faith and message like I do, but like many groups, I'm going to be way more dogmatic than they are, and I just can't be a part of a body that's not as dogmatic. And listen, that's typical. So it's nothing against them in comparison to anybody else, but when you have a 1,000-member SBC church, you're going to have a broader door, if you will. So not the right fit for me. I go to my Sunday school class. You know, I talk to my friends that I have there, but that's that. And when I got kicked out of Roland Springs Baptist Church, I became a member, technically, formally, a member of Jordan Hall's church, Fellowship Baptist Church in Sydney. So it's a very odd thing. I'm a member of a church I've never been to, and it's in Montana. And I'm good friends with the pastor. I don't really know many other people there. But I'm a member of that church, even though I've never gone. That's the local church of which I'm a member. And that's a strange situation. And people always, they see that and they think, well, that's weird, Seth. There's something wrong with that. Well, yeah, there is, because I got kicked out of church. Where am I going to go? But they knew the reason I got kicked out of church was for being righteous. So here I am, every Sunday at First Baptist Church. And, you know, I go to Wednesday night meals sometimes. I mean, I'm involved with the church. I take my kids to the kids' activity. One of my babies was dedicated there when he was born. I mean, if you saw me every week, if you're just one of the 1,000 people who go there, you wouldn't know I'm not a member here. And even though I went to seminary and I feel called to preach, that I'm not interested at this juncture in my life in approaching them to say, will you license me to the ministry? So I've been 4 years, almost 5 years, I guess, having graduated seminary, not licensed. Well, that is all changing in December, Lord willing. I have booked a plane ticket to go to the church at which I'm a member, to Sidney, Montana. And I'm going to preach on Sunday. And that's the plan. And then sit before a committee to get licensed to be a minister, so that I can have a local church that says, we endorse this guy. Now, why is that important to me? Because, listen, it's not in the Bible. There's no such thing as licensure in the Bible. It's a cultural thing. It's important to me because if I want to start a Bible study enterprise in Cartersville, I want to be able to say, I'm licensed by this church. And listen, here in Cartersville, quite frankly, I want to tell you, I haven't been to every church, but I don't think there's a church I'd want to join here in Georgia Baptist world. And gosh, I really liked Roland Springs. I really did. And I thought, man, this is the church for me. And then Masons. And you want to say, Seth, that's about you, because you'll always find one thing. But I know a lot of you podcasters who've been in the same experience I have really had trouble finding a church where your convictions match with everybody else's. And that's how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to be in one accord. So even though it's I'm not saying it's unbiblical, even though it's an abiblical thing, I want to go get that licensure and say, when I sit down to like rent a facility here to do a Bible study or start something in my basement when I get it finished, that I'm licensed. I am licensed to this ministry. Because a local church endorses me. And that's an important thing. Let me give you an example of somebody who had his license revoked. Remember Clayton Jennings, who we've talked about time after time on this show? And at Pulpit and Pen, he was licensed by his church in Indiana. And the name escapes me. 2 or 3 years ago, I'd have been able to tell you the name backwards and forwards. I think his dad, Don Jennings, was the pastor. So Clayton had said, I'm called to the ministry, and he was licensed there. And Clayton would go around to conferences and other churches, and he'd be given the pulpit to preach. And he could say, I'm licensed by so-and-so church. Well, when it turned out, I've lost count of how many women he seduced that we reported on. Or the ones that we didn't report on, I think, are more than the ones we reported on. But it was something like 6 or 7. When all that came out about Clayton Jennings seducing people, not I don't want to say through his preaching, but he wouldn't have met him if he wasn't a preacher. Kind of like I wrote an article about this. Kind of like the preacher from, not Grapes of Wrath. What's the sign? Is it Grapes of Wrath? What is the Steinbeck book about the Okies? I think it is the Grapes of Wrath. So now is the night of my discontent. How about that? Because I can't remember it. It's not the winter of my discontent, because I think it's still fall. Anyway, he was like one of these, you know, almost tropish, seductive preachers. So when that came out, he lost his license. His church said, we no longer endorse you. So any church that or organization that would still have him was doing it, knowing he was not endorsed by his local church. So a license is something you can lose. Think of it like this. I have a master's in accounting. I met all the academic requirements to be a licensed CPA. But what I had to do was pass the test and get endorsed by the state. And you think the state has ministries like Minister of Defense, Minister of Economics, etc. So I am licensed formally by the state of Georgia to practice accounting. I can do your taxes. I can do your audits. You know, I can sign the paper. Seth Duncombe, CPA. I did this.
just like your hairdresser has to be licensed.
I guess plumber. Do plumbers have to be licensed? I don't know. But I did the program formally, but now I'm licensed by the ministry. So you think it the same way about preachers who become licensed. Anybody can go to seminary. You know, they'll say anybody can't because you have to have endorsements. But guys, you should do it as an experiment. If you know, just apply to seminary and see if they don't let you in. I guarantee you, if your check clears, they'll let you in. If your check clears and you say you're saved, they'll let you in. And hey, listen, they're not trying to turn anybody away from learning about the Bible and doing ministry. If you're not meant to be there, you won't pass. So I'm not trying to go down, be down on them or anything. Seminary's hard. Not academically, it's a time commitment. I mean, Southern Baptist. I don't know if this is the same with all the other SB seminaries, but I mean, it's sort of a cakewalk. It's not hard to make an A. I mean, you ain't doing calculus. But that's where I am, and that's what I'm doing. So sometime in December, you will not get an episode of the Christian Commute because I'm not commuting, because I'm not at work, because I flew off to preach and be licensed. Probably the furthest anybody's ever gone to be licensed by his local church. An unusual situation for an abiblical thing for sure, but I hope you understand why I'm doing it. And now I hope you're also aware of this thing about church culture that you might not have known about before, which is licensure. Where will it go from here? I don't know, but I want to tell you this. This is something, kind of a realization I've come to. I spent a long time and wrote at least three books. I mean, I did write three books, but to what degree they were about reforming the Southern Baptist Convention, you could argue one of them is definitely about that, but the other two, kind of halfway. I wrote books, I wrote a lot of blogs, I spent a lot of time trying to open people's eyes in my denomination about the corruption in our convention and some of our local churches. And it never really got better. It's even though Russell Moore is gone, it's gotten worse. I was unsuccessful in trying to help reform the Southern Baptist Convention. And I think I shut a lot of doors in being a blogger. And I've tried to, through my blogs and through this podcast, which I do not intend to stop, but I hardly blog anymore, guys. I tried to reform and inform. It didn't happen. And at this point in my life, what I really want to do is use my gifts and use my ability to teach and explain the Bible to people and use my zealousness for dogma to minister to people here where I live. That's what I want to do. People ask me about SBC stuff now and be like, well, this is what's the latest thing, Seth? I don't know, man. They're getting worse and being more corrupt than they were yesterday. What else is new? There's nothing new under the sun. I can't tell you the latest happenings at the biggest crooked mega church anymore. I can't do it. I don't keep up with it anymore. What I want to do is spend my time doing this. How about I put it this way? This podcast locally. Because I know I reach a lot of people with this podcast all throughout the country. And I get your reviews and I get your letters and emails. And I'm happy it's a blessing to you. But I want to start positively affecting people in the flesh, like local Bible study, and we'll see where it goes from there. But I think the first step in legitimately being able to do that, because I don't want to be a lone ranger, lone wolf Christian, is saying I've got a local church that endorses me. And I get asked by people. My therapist asks me this, and sometimes I think, like, do you not listen to me because you wouldn't ask me this question over and over? You know what? I'm going to tell her I'm going to get licensed because I go to my therapist tomorrow. I want to tell her
I'm going to say, oh, I'm going in December to get licensed in the ministry. And I guarantee you, because I know my therapist, she'll say, well, why don't you, Seth, you should just, she'll say, how do you like First Baptist? And I'll give her the same answer I always give her. And then she'll say, well, why don't you start your own church? And I'm just going to have an autistic stamp. And I'm going to say, I tell you every week that I'm not going to start my own church. Why don't you listen to me? It's your job to listen to me, therapist. And I'm not one of these people who yells at my therapist. I'm probably not going to yell at her. But I will say that to her. Like every you ask me this. You always ask me this. And what's the reason I don't start my own local church? I've told you this before. Who does that? Mark Driscoll? Perry Noble, Stephen Furtick, Andy Stanley, they're these guys who are starting local businesses. I don't want to be a lone wolf guy who says, well, I feel called to do this, so I'm going to do it. Because I'm not trying to start a business. I'm not trying to make it about me. I want somebody behind me to at least license me before I start any activity that even remotely looks like that. So that's about me, but now you're informed on what licensure is. So does your local church license people? You should ask. Maybe some of them you don't want licensed. Maybe some of them you do. I don't know, but get involved with your church life. How about this? Go to a business meeting. Because there's a lot happening out there. And, you know, we talk about the people who can't complain if they don't like the government because they don't vote. Well, if you don't like the direction of your church and what they're doing, maybe it's because you didn't go to the business meeting. Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. I'm your host, Seth Dunn. As always, God bless. Hold on a second here. Where's my phone? Got to turn it off. As always, God bless. And as always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.
Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to SethDunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.